Today on the 21st Show, African-American audiences have long been underserved by the mass media, and public radio has been no exception. But there's a new effort in Central Illinois that aims to change that by appealing to Black listeners with public radio news, information, music, and culture. We'll talk about that and the ways Black audiences have and have not been served by the mass media. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, WNIJ in DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Whom does the media serve? Programs like this or your local TV newscasts are meant for a wide audience. They aim to inform people from all sorts of backgrounds about what's going on in their communities and help them make informed decisions about their lives. The same goes for a lot of entertainment, TV shows, movies, and pop music. That's the theory, anyway, but the reality is there are many people who are, at best, left out of those pictures, and sometimes they're actually hurt by what's depicted in mass media. So they turn elsewhere, to media made by those communities, about those communities, and for those communities. That's been the case for African Americans for well more than a century. In Illinois, the first Black newspaper started in Cairo in 1862. Fast forward to the present, and there are still several media outlets by and for Illinois' Black communities, which provide vital information and cultural connection. But those outlets face the same struggles that all media companies do in our present fractured age, and they have the added headwinds of an environment where systemic racism is still a fact of life. Today we're going to spend the entire hour talking about the state of Black media in Illinois, what it's meant to do, how it's changed, and what could keep it surviving and thriving in the years ahead. Linda Lawson has experienced a lot of that firsthand. She's been a journalist for more than 40 years. Presently, she's community writer for the East St. Louis Monitor, a paper that got its start in the early 1960s. Linda, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Also with us, Professor Jane Rhodes. She was a journalist herself at one point. She's a trained mass media historian and a professor in Black studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Professor Rhodes, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Lord Mike Williams is president of the Peoria Black Chamber of Commerce, marketing and communications director of the Illinois State Black Chamber of Commerce, and former radio host on WZPW-FM, what was then known as Power 92.3 in Peoria. Mike, welcome back to the program to you as well.
Peace and blessings, Brian. And glad to be on with everyone today.
And I should mention, later on in the program, we'll be joined by Jill Clements. She is responsible for underwriting at Illinois Public Media, our home station, which just launched an entirely new separate station focused on Black voices, music, and culture. It's called Illinois Soul, and we'll have a little more on that later in the program. For now, you can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What is your experience with mass media reporting on Black communities where you live? What were you taught to believe about the media and whom it serves? And what needs to change? Give us a call again, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, Professor Rhodes, I want to begin with you. How have you seen Black audiences be served or not served by mainstream media, historically speaking?
Well, the history of the Black press and Black media, it speaks to the fact that mainstream media never really acknowledged that there is a Black audience, that there are Black communities, and that those stories and that news is generally not told. So this goes all the way back to the 19th century, and certainly up until today, we still face that dilemma. If you turn on the TV, if you get online, if you turn on the radio, there might be a minor reference to African Americans, unless it's Barack Obama or a celebrity or some other sort of key famous person. But what goes on in neighborhoods and communities, the issues that are facing Black Americans are just something that is not generally addressed. So that's why there has been this long history of creating alternative media that addresses those communities. Black people need some place where they can organize, they can tell their stories, they can convey important information, and also a place where they see themselves, where they don't feel like they are relegated to the margins, where they don't feel like they're subject to, you know, negative racial associations. So there are a lot of reasons why these kinds of media emerged over 200 years ago and still have a place today.
What do you think is the problem with mainstream media, right? Is it, you know, corporate profit seeking? Is it systemic racism? Is it personal racism on the part of editors? How do you think about those factors?
It's a lot of all of those things. I think most mainstream journalists are well-meaning. They're interested in telling information. They play a critical role in our democracy. But journalists, editors, producers are also product of the society. And many who are not Black have gotten a lifetime of messages that suggest that Blacks only fit into certain kinds of categories, or that Black life and Black communities are really monolithic in many ways. And so, you know, I think systemic racism is part of it. Occasionally it's individual racism, but I think the main thing is the economic structures of media. We're in a crisis, quite frankly, in American media today, where newspapers and magazines are disappearing as fast as it's just an astonishing rate at which we're losing really important media. Television, mainstream television network audiences have dropped dramatically, and even online cable television is struggling to maintain an audience. And so much has been thrown into the digital media environment. So I think all of the mainstream media are struggling to keep and capture an audience. And they're going to go with what they believe to be appealing to the largest number of people. And if you assume that African Americans in most markets are a relatively small number, then African Americans are not going to be the ones who are addressed or catered to, except in February during Black History Month.
Lord Mike Williams, I want to bring you into the conversation now. So you work with businesses. I wonder how you see mainstream media succeeding or failing to succeed in not just covering Black communities, but also informing and engaging with them.
Well, Brian, this in itself is a success, you know, having outlets and broadcasts and fine programming and journalists such as yourself that that bring it to the attention, that have the conversation. You know, it would fall from you and your organization to how it's promoted and how it's targeted towards relevant listeners and relevant bodies of that such there. So this in itself is a success. Now, when we talk about the pitfalls and the failures and the shortcomings, which there are of many, and I think that first and foremost, there's a level of unintentionality, you know, that goes along with everything else, that there's kind of an underlying current to, you know, not really be as intentional as we need to be about really messaging the relevant content to the relevant people. When we're talking about Black media, or whether we're talking about Black listeners, Black listening bodies. Now, as far as the I can attest to that. Basically, so we do a broadcast with the Illinois State Black Chamber of Commerce called the Wake Up Show. Every Saturday morning, it's a simulcast on WVON 1690 and our podcast. And we speak, of course, we speak business-centric things, but we're talking about things that affect Black communities, Black business communities. And there's a resounding feedback loop of they don't know. We don't know. And the things that we do know, we're having so much challenge, so many hurdles actually getting past the things that we do know that are really creating the disparities that are out there. So even though we do a broadcast, it reaches a demographic and a sizable demographic, there's still, you know, there still needs to be a heightened level of intentionality to help to bolster those voices so that they actually can't penetrate to where they need to be. So I think that in terms of resources, it falls largely, you know, ever since Ida B. Wells and The Defender began, you know, way, way back, it falls largely on us to resource our messaging, whereas, you know, the majority of major outlets and a lot of the, even the smaller outlets that aren't targeted towards ethnocentric demographics, they aren't properly resourced. And so that's one of the big shortcomings of mass media.
All right. I think that's a good segue into bringing Linda Lawson into our conversation. So where does media like the East St. Louis Monitor enter the picture here, right? What is the role of the Monitor in the communities you are working to serve?
You know, it really is almost like a foghorn for the African American and how essential it is in a small community. Really saw that during the pandemic when we almost, you know, had to shut down for a minute. There's that unique quality to be able to be the eyes and ears for the community and to disseminate the information that directly relates to, you know, us and our heritage that gets overlooked or discounted at times in mainstream media. And now in this time it's more critical than ever when you see history being revised or honestly in some ways erased, attempts to erase it, that you're a trusted source that people look to. And that has continued for now over 100 years for our paper.
You know, it strikes me that it's great to have media that is by and for African-American news consumers, but it's also maybe not the same thing as being reflected fully and fairly in, for example, in your region, the Metro East region, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or the Elton Telegraph or the Belleville News Democrat. Linda, what do you Correct. Think of that? Can you say more about that?
I think part of it, honestly, is diversity. Because you need another lens to be able to see something or catch something that someone else who hasn't lived that experience may not recognize or think of or consider. Part of it now becomes finances and everybody cutting back. So then it becomes, okay, which communities do you provide in some ways less critical services to or service? Because they're moving those dollars elsewhere. Those would I would say would be the two greatest things that you see, and as a result, we suffer.
You know, this is a small example, but I saw a tweet over the weekend after the Super Bowl halftime performance by Usher, and it was some news organization that said Usher's performance fizzles, and some a black woman journalist and journalism professor said, you need more black people on your staff, if that's your take on this. I wonder if you, or maybe Lord Mike Williams, I'll ask you about what you think of that. I don't know if you saw the Super Bowl, but.
Well, I certainly saw the Super Bowl. Are you asking me specifically about Usher's performance, though?
Well, no. Yeah, sure. But in the context, you know, as the example of like, you know, well, that's because you don't have, you know, the way you see the mainstream lens is because just not enough people in the newsroom.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I could only concur with that. I mean, I would vehemently concur with that. Usher's performance was what it was. And frankly, we still need representation, whether you liked it, loved it, or hated it, quite frankly. And when we talk about in the newsroom, you know, we need representation, as we say in the chamber, we need representation from the suites to the streets, meaning that policies are largely set in the suites, you know, by executives, by legislators, things of that nature. And by the time that those things aggregate to the streets, you know, that's where a lot of the disparities are really borne out. Once they get to that level there, we're actually on the ground moving those things, you know. So, you know, it's for example, I would say, Brian, you know, when we look at what's really going on out there that really affects the Black community, and of course, I'm a lot of times I'm speaking from an economic social perspective, not just from an entertainment perspective. So when we look at things that are important to the Black community, we automatically are connect that to the Black business community, because, you know, if we have strong Black businesses, then we'll have strong Black communities, and then America will have strong Black communities, you know, across the board. So we need to be messaging things that are really pertinent, you know, and if you don't have true representation that is not just sensitized, you know, not just it has a tender ear towards the issues, for example, the attacks that are going on against affirmative action programming and legislation, you know, a lot of times on the streets is where they're really feeling it. Even though some in the suites and the C-suites, as well as middle management, middle America, they're feeling and they're going to feel more of those pains as they bear themselves out. But if we don't have representation from people who actually live the condition and live the experience and are really in it for real, then it's hard to convey that in a compelling enough way that's not totally confrontational.
Yeah.
You know, that's
all right, where
it's lost in the sauce.
We're going to have to take a break. We will continue this conversation in a moment here on the 21st Show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Black media in Illinois, the struggles that African-American communities have faced in representation, especially fair and full representation, the role that Black media fills, and how that's changing as time goes on. We've been talking about this with Lord Mike Williams of the Peoria Black Chamber of Commerce, also a former radio host on what was then Power 92.3 in Peoria, Jane Rhodes, professor in Black Studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and Linda Lawson, community writer for the East St. Louis Monitor. You can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And before the break, we were talking about not just Black media, but mainstream media and, you know, the different lens that having Black perspectives in the newsroom can bring. And Professor Rhodes, I think with you, we can go even bigger picture, because your work focuses on how aggrieved communities have used all sorts of culture, right? Not just newspapers, but print, film, electronic media, music, as modes of resistance and empowerment. Can you talk about some of the values of that sort of expression?
Absolutely. Social movements since, again, the 19th century and certainly in the 20th and 21st centuries use media as an organizing tool. If you think about all of the sort of crises that have happened in Black communities since the 1960s, how do people find out what's going on? How do they get intelligence? How do they learn about where there's going to be a meeting or a rally? How do they sort of read and understand what the various issues are? Well, they use media. It used to be primarily print media, and it then went more to radio, and radio played a really critical role. And then in the 21st century, it's largely been social media, digital media. But, you know, part of it is that, especially if you're a minoritized group, if you are promoting an agenda, or are acting in resistance to the people who are in power, then you need a kind of protected space that you can own and that you can control, right? So without gatekeepers, perhaps, that are saying, no, we're not gonna publish this, or we're not gonna broadcast this. So the media plays a vital role in the Black freedom struggle in particular, and in all social movements, whether it's Arab Spring abroad, whether it's in other kinds of activist enterprises. Without media, without recording and what's happening on the streets, without media to sort of provide background and intelligence, most social movements would suffer greatly.
You know, I'm so glad you brought up the idea of gatekeepers and the advent of social media, because this has been a double-edged sword, right? We just had a recent conversation on the program about how the lack of gatekeepers means there's a lot more free flow of misinformation and disinformation in there in the world, for better and for worse. We have lost a lot of gatekeepers. Can you talk, Professor Rhodes, about, you know, this changing media landscape where, you know, podcasts, TikToks, anyone can make media, and that media can be consumed by a wide audience?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. And I probably will offer an unpopular opinion, because I think today everybody thinks they're a journalist and a communicator, regardless of whether they have training, whether they have a kind of diverse and broad perspective, whether they have the experience. I mean, basically all you need is a phone, and you can start your own media outlet. And I think part of the challenge is that if you're doing that, you have to have a sense of social responsibility, right? That people are going to read and consume and your whatever you put out there, and that if you travel in misinformation, you are creating harm for the public. And this is particularly true for Black Americans and for Black audiences. So, you know, it's tricky. Gatekeepers, on the one hand, historically often were biased and didn't give Black Americans the full voice and opportunity to promote their information. And that's why Black media emerged as such a vital resource. And without gatekeepers, I think you have a lot of challenges. You know, I have to admit, I come from a tradition. I was trained as a journalist, both in school and, you know, on the job. And there's a lot of practices and ethics and responsibilities that you have as a journalist. And, you know, folks who just decide, oh, I'm going to do this, it looks easy, have not had that kind of training, and quite frankly, often are doing it for themselves, to make themselves popular, rather than because they feel some sense of responsibility to the larger public.
Linda Lawson, I wonder how you've seen that. You're a community writer at the East St. Louis Monitor. How have you seen this dynamic playing out in the work that you do, with, you know, people in the community able to get information even without someone as close to the ground as yourself?
I concur with that in terms of credibility's sake. When you said you can pick up a phone or use a computer app, and the good thing about being established within the community, there's a credibility that comes with that, and which you hope, which we all, I think, hope now, with there being so much misinformation, that they fall back on the reputation you've built over time of something that can be trusted, and that, you know, you are trained to disseminate
proper information. And if you don't mind, can I circle back to something of that?
Sure thing.
You said in terms of the diverse lens and how that's so important within the community. There are two key experiences I wanted to say very quickly. When, and in terms of how that does for our history, when Miles Davis died, which you would think most people would know his historical value. Russ Mitchell at the time was working for a local TV station here who went national at CBS. And he had to really explain to them and fight to get the station to understand that was an important news story. So if his voice hadn't been there, it would have been relegated elsewhere. There was another particular one with
PBS. I'm sorry, Drew, I need to explain for our listeners that of course, the House of Miles, home of Miles, is East St. Louis. Yeah, in case there were some people who didn't make that connection, although we have talked about it on the program in the past, but I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. Then there was an interesting PBS story several years back, which was a voice show of this doctor. He became a doctor, but as a little boy, he lied on their housekeeper that she had stolen some money that she hadn't. But it bothered him all those years. And PBS wanted to do a story to reunite him or find that lady's family. And it was presented as this feel-good story for him to finally apologize. Well, there was a backlash to that because no one had considered how devastating that was to that family back then. And if there had been other voices of color at that table, they would have been able to say it then before it got to the public and they received the backlash that they did.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking about the role of Black media in Illinois and how it's evolved, how communities benefit from it, and what needs to happen for that media to not just survive, but thrive. We've been talking about this with Linda Lawson, community writer for the East St. Louis Monitor, Lord Mike Williams of the Peoria Black Chamber of Commerce and former radio host in Peoria, also Professor Jane Rhodes in Black Studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And as I mentioned at the start of today's program, there is a new radio station aiming to serve Black communities in Illinois. It's called Illinois Soul, and full disclosure, it is a project of Illinois Public Media, our home station. And joining the conversation now to talk about this is Jill Clements, who is responsible for underwriting at Illinois Public Media and one of the major people involved in getting Illinois Soul off the ground. Jill, welcome to the 21st show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Listeners, 800-222-9455 to join our conversation. 800-222-9455. All right, Jill, what is the elevator pitch? What are some of the things people will hear when they tune in to Illinois Soul?
Oh, when you turn into Illinois Soul 101.1, you are going to hear the best of R&B. You're going to hear neo soul and smooth jazz. And we've married that with high quality NPR Black voiced news programs. So that's what's special about Illinois Soul. We also have localized programming. So we have a wonderful community news magazine called Dialogue. And that's where we went on the air February 1st. And the first episode of Dialogue had Chancellor Robert Jones on there. And that was great. And we got a lot of great inside information there. And this past week, Chief Boone, the chief of police in Urbana, was also on Dialogue. So we are localized, but we also are bringing you national news. And it's a great mix. And we're really focused on local, becoming regional, and even hitting a national audience at Illinois Soul.
Jill, talk about that mix of news and culture, especially, you know, music, bringing that in.
Well, it's no secret that public media hasn't done the best job of marketing to a Black audience. So we took on this mission. We started with community affairs special events. It was called News, Brews, and Beats. It was out in a safe space in the community. And we talked about gun violence and the impact that it had here locally. Of course, it had a national impact, but we looked at it from a local perspective. And so that special event, Brian, turned into a television show, which ended up launching Illinois Soul, because we could see the need for this audience who wasn't being served. And we took on that mission unapologetically.
Jill, you have worked for Black-owned media in the past. You've also worked at mainstream media outlets. Can you talk about some of the examples from your own life experience of the difference that Black ownership makes in media?
It's FUBU. It's for us, by us, talking to us, being seen, being heard. Just like Illinois Soul, you're going to hear us, but you're going to see us as well. We have currently built great partnerships in the campus, on campus, in the community. We're currently doing special events with Krannert Center at the Uncorked every Thursday night from 5 to 7. We are there, and you hear our music. It's the live bands that you will also hear that kind of music on Illinois Soul. We are also out at the Virginia Theater with movie screening. So, you know, it's really important to be linked to the community so the community is heard and seen. We didn't just put this together and throw it out into the community. Brian, we did surveys for over a year out at different community events. We assembled a community advisory panel with the perfect mix of leadership from both the University of Illinois campus and local community leaders. And we even did listening sessions where we bought in people from the community and we took a deeper dive to find out what are the topics that are important to you. What are you facing in this community? What would you like to see? What does this Black media service mean to you? Because again, it hasn't been here for quite some time. And we are looking to be that hub, that headquarters for connecting the campus and the community, starting locally, and then again, touching regionally, and of course, you know, we're going all the way national.
Okay, we have to take a break in another 2 minutes, but Professor Rhodes, I do want to ask in the time we have before that, you know, I'm going to set up a straw man here. From one perspective, we've never had as much Black culture in the mainstream media as we have today, right? Black artists clean up at the Grammys, Usher at the Super Bowl, movies and TV shows and podcasts and anything else you can think of. What is the place for independent, either Black-owned or Black-focused media?
That's a great question. You know, there continues to be a place because Black life and Black culture, Black politics still gets short shrift in the mainstream. You know, we have our Black celebrities and our athletes and our political figures, and certainly we're much more visible today than we were 50 years ago or 100 years ago. But what about ordinary Black folks and how things happen in Black communities and the concerns people have about education or Black business and so forth? Those stories still aren't told. And that's why you really need alternative media sources so that people have a voice and people have a way to get information.
All right, we are going to take another break. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st Show. We've been talking about the role of Black media in Illinois, how it's evolved, how communities benefit from it, and what needs to happen for that media to continue to survive and thrive. Our guests have been Jane Rhodes, professor in Black Studies at the University of Illinois Chicago, Linda Lawson, community writer for the East St. Louis Monitor, and Lord Mike Williams of the Peoria Black Chamber of Commerce, also a former radio host there, and Jill Clements, who is responsible for underwriting at Illinois Public Media and was one of the major people helping get this new radio station in Central Illinois off the ground. It's called Illinois Soul. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. 800-222-9455 to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. We are going to continue after the break. This is the 21st show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Black media in Illinois. Our guests today are Jane Rhodes, professor in Black study at the University of Illinois, Chicago, Black studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago, Linda Lawson, community writer at the East St. Louis Monitor, Lord Mike Williams of the Peoria and Illinois State Black Chamber of Commerce, also a former radio host, Power 92.3 in Peoria, and Jill Clements, who is one of the major people at Illinois Public Media, our home station, that helped launch this new station called Illinois Soul, aimed at Black audiences. And 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation today. And Professor Rhodes, I want to come back to you, and not at the risk of sounding like I'm doing a lot of log rolling here, but what precedent is there for something like Illinois Soul, right? Either a nonprofit, or maybe not just a nonprofit, but an NPR station reaching out with programming meant to appeal to Black audiences aged 35 and up?
Yeah, there's a few precedents, not many. In the Chicago area, the Vocalo station started a number of years ago. It's affiliated with Chicago Public Radio and is an urban contemporary music format. I think similarly in Chicago, there is a recognition that despite the fact that there is this robust media environment on the radio, that there weren't a lot of options, particularly in public media, for Black folks to become involved with and for a Black audience. I mean, it goes back to the 1950s, there when public broadcasting first emerged. There were a number of television programs that came on the air in major cities in New York and Chicago and Boston and other places. And so I think that's the real precedent. There was this idea that Black people needed to showcase who they were and to have a voice that wasn't ordinarily available. So the public broadcasting media landscape has been around and has been creating these alternative spaces for Black communities, but they're fragmented, they're few and far between. And I'm delighted to see that there is now one for Southern Illinois. It sounds like a really exciting project.
Linda, we talked about the role of new media and the idea of the sort of credibility of the mainstream that brings to your reporting. You know, I guess there is so much focus on social media these days, right? But there's still a place for radio or newspapers like the one you write for in the culture, right?
Yes, but you almost have to marry it with some form of social media. There absolutely is. There's still a group that wants that, like people who read books, want something they can put in their hand. But at the same time, you have to be, to survive, you have to be innovative and accept this is the new frontier that you also have to navigate to stay relevant. So it's a combination of the two now. But there is absolutely, and I hope always will be, a place that is unique like that.
Do you find You're ever having to convince people that you're talking to out in the community of the importance of news? I mean, do they say, that's not for me. I just need to, you know, live my life. I got kids. I got a job, that sort of thing. I feel like that's people are less interested in news than they used to be.
At times, part of that is they're so busy trying to survive life just in general, that they don't realize that information that's, you know, being put out there for them, how that's critical to their lives. So it is also that challenge of the importance of news versus, you know, telling my age here, growing up when everybody would turn into Walter Cronkite. And you knew there would be something important that you needed to know for your everyday living. That's a little different now. That's different.
Lord Mike Williams, how can new media help cultivate community in downstate towns like Peoria, like Springfield, Decatur, Champaign-Urbana?
New media. Well, you know, I'll tell you, just kind of, you know, circling back a little bit to a little bit of your questioning before, because I think it's relevant to this. Terrestrial radio and broadcasting still has a place. And, you know, this is a consumer nation. We consume. So a lot of people are burnt out on politics, and there's different aspects of news that they're turned off of, for example. Just putting it out there, just to say the name Black Lives Matters, now it draws connotations, and some people from different sects, they automatically have alongside, you know, I've heard enough of that and so forth. But news in general, everybody's looking for the tea, you know, so wherever they get their news from, we have to be deliberate in messaging to those avenues. And that kind of circles back to what we were talking about gatekeepers earlier, you know, and Professor Rhodes, you know, she really hit it on the head when she spoke to that everybody thinks that they're a journalist or a armchair quarterback, you know, when it comes to all the social media and everybody having such immediate access to that there. You know, there are two streams to being a gatekeeper, right? You have the gatekeepers of resource and the gatekeepers of messaging. And they both, one begets the other in a lot of situations, a lot of cases there. But if we really make sure that we are properly resourcing the appropriate messengers, then the critical nuances can be there that we need to really get the messages across to our targeted markets. And I'll kind of, you know, we here in Central Illinois, we have 90.7 WAZU, which is a part of the public media family. And they get great traction, and they're touching all the different platforms of broadcasting and media, right? So I think that we need to pivot the paradigm and kind of shift the attitude nomenclature from, you know, this, when we're talking about Black media, and you know, I've been the marketing communication director for the Illinois State Black Chamber for over a decade now, and we have very intimate relationships with a lot of Black media outlets from Chicago all the way down to East St. Louis. Okay. So we deal very intimately with a lot of the different media outlets. And I think the biggest piece is that we need to have a concerted effort to shift the paradigm from this being alternative media to being another option. You know, this is just as important as everything else. It's an option that you all can choose. You don't have to choose it, but it should be an option and not just an alternative, because this is a narrative that everybody needs to really be aware of and consume if possible. So with the proper resourcing and having the right messengers in the right places, from the suites to the streets, I think that all of these new facets of media, whether they be the digital platforms, whether they be the direct, even the more direct platforms that are even more intimate, I think they can all be successful if we're really intentional and deliberate about really utilizing them appropriately.
That's an interesting point. Jill, what do you think of that? That maybe, do you see Illinois Soul is not as an alternative, but as part of the mainstream becoming that way?
Oh, definitely. Mainstream. What we have to do is build the trust and respect the community in which we're serving and have that commitment of staying and the longevity of it. And it is definitely reaching a mainstream audience.
Jill, what do you hope that people, Black communities in particular, but even outside Black communities, what do you hope they get out of Illinois Soul?
I hope they get a chance to be inspired, you know, empowered, entertained, and just when we're all gone and on to other things, that, you know, the legacy is Illinois Soul is still here and it's still growing with the next generation and serves that need of the community at that time.
Lord Mike Williams, you know, looking beyond this, Illinois Soul, mainstream media in general, what do they need to do? What do we need to do to be more inclusive of Black voices? I guess that gets back to what you were saying about not as an alternative, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, again, it's the intentionality to be inclusive, because there's been a culture of exclusion, right? So we have to be deliberate in creating a culture of inclusion now. And, you know, I think that just the title, Illinois Soul, which is a heritage term, okay, soul music, the soul people and all that. We have Soul City, which is a long-term project that we're working on in Chicago, one of our Federation members in the Austin community, the AAA BNA. Now, that essentially is a effort to create a, it's called Soul City, but it's a designated area that represents and celebrates Black culture the same way that you have Chinatown, you have Little Italy, you have Greek Town, you know. But when it comes to having quote unquote Black Town, there's always been pushback. So there needs to be a heightened level of intentionality to embrace Black culture. So when we say soul, that's a heritage term that is being revived again with this fantastic broadcast platform that you guys are putting together here. And I think that we collectively, we shouldn't, you know, even on the new platforms that are coming out there, we have to be very intentional about how we really utilize it and how we share it and how it's being received and how it's being embraced, because the resources that it needs, that your broadcast and your platform is going to need to continue to thrive into the future, those resources shouldn't just be tied to you personally going out there doing all the fundraiser. You should have access to all the resources that every other platform has. Mm-hmm. And just like all the other outlets and everything else, if we really want to do target messaging to our people, right, and we should understand that that message has to be properly resourced so that it can reach where it needs to be and be received appropriately. And that way it can become part of the new nomenclature, right? And not just relegated to hushed, quiet rooms. You can only say it on bated breath and under your breath in certain circles. You know, it's not just an alternative, because we're not an alternative to America. We're a part of America, you know? So we should be celebrated as that, and we should be embraced as that.
Professor Rhodes, I think probably the last word in our conversation to you. What does it look like if we stop, you know, building up Black media, stop pushing, stop doing this work?
Well, I think regardless of whether institutions promote Black media, there will always be Black media and Black voices. African-American communities are very ingenious in figuring out ways to get their message out, whether it's, you know, through rap music or social media or art and performance or newspapers. We figure out a way to convey our politics, to convey our community interests, to convey the sort of joy of Black life, despite all of the negative circumstances that we encounter. So, you know, I think Black media will continue and it will survive, but it's going to go through all of these twists and turns that we've been talking about, because as long as most media is dependent on revenue and advertising and you know, deep pockets, there's always going to be a question about whether or not that is supported by Black communities. But I'm optimistic. I see all kinds of new, exciting, innovative Black media platforms emerging. And like Illinois Soul, I think they're around to stay.
Jane Rhodes is a former journalist, trained mass media historian, and professor in Black Studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago. We've also been speaking with Lord Mike Williams, president of the Peoria Black Chamber of Commerce, Linda Lawson, a community writer for the East St. Louis Monitor, and Jill Clements, who is responsible for underwriting at Illinois Public Media and helped launch Illinois Soul, part of our home station, Illinois Public Media. Thank you all so much for being with us and taking part in this conversation today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for our broadcast today. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about a program that is connecting Illinois agriculture with Illinois' neediest people. It's called Farm to Food Bank. And we'll also look at the rise of non-alcoholic bars, which have been popping up everywhere from Chicago to Springfield. That is all coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.